Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Squawkstick Fargo everywhere, and this is the 2000 AD Thrillcast, everything you need to know about the galaxy's greatest comic. I am your host, Mulch R, and this week we are going to be celebrating on Saturday 40 years of Thrill Power at a special one-day convention in Hammersmith. Looking forward to seeing everybody who's got their tickets. Sorry if you missed out, but don't worry, we're going to be talking to my colleague Owen Johnson in a bit about what's in store for those who can make it, but also how you can join us even if you're not able to make it on the day. This is obviously a momentous month for 2000 AD, and we have a couple of publications that perfectly sum that up. We have 2000 AD's Greatest, which is a very unusual collection of 2000 AD stories. It's not been put together by us so much as curated by our creators. We went to some of our creators, both new and old, and asked them what their favourite 2000 AD stories were, and they came back with some really interesting selections. Not the normal ones you would expect, you know, the top five that everybody names, but some ones that either meant something to them personally or did something that really inspired them. And that's been put together in a fantastic paperback edition, which I really do recommend because it gives you a fantastic flavour of 40 years of storytelling in one volume. So thank you to all the creators involved in that. Do go out and buy that. It's available from all good bookstores and our webshop. We also have the behemoth of a volume, which is Thrill Power Overload, updated for the 40th anniversary. For those of you who read Thrill Power Overload about 10 years ago, this was based on a series of features started by former editor Dave Bishop in the Judge Dredd magazine. It was expanded and corrected and revised, and the old edition sold out many moons ago. So we have updated it for 2017, and yeah, it's an incredible read. You get a fantastic sense of what's taken place over the last four decades. And it's out in hardback now from all good bookstores, comic book stores, and our webshop, but also will be available digitally from our webshop and apps, which the original edition was not. So make sure that those two collections are on your to-buy list immediately, Earthlit. On top of that, we have a fantastic collection called Judge Dredd Every Empire Falls, written by Mike Carroll with art by people like Paul Davidson and PJ Holden and Henry Flint, which is a collection of Michael Carroll's stories from last year in Judge Dredd, which, well, to be quite frank, and if you weren't reading it in the prog, then you really do need to pick this up. It's a fascinating epic, which really does touch on our times about the changing political face of the world and what it's like for Megacity One now that it's so weakened after the Day of Chaos. What does that mean for Megacity One in the world? And yeah, there's blood in the water and the sharks are starting to circle. So definitely one that you should be picking up. Three books. Well, that's probably all your spending money for the month. But those of you who are coming to the 40th anniversary event this Saturday, well, hope you bring your galactic groats with you because there's such good things on offer from our licensees and direct from us at 2000 AD. We're very excited, and as a result of that, I thought I would invite my colleague Owen, who is helping put together this wonderful weekend. I thought I would welcome him in for a chat.
Greetings, Earthlets. I live.
it's an odd kind of life. There's smoke coming out of your ears, mate.
Yep.
So, we are hours away from the 40 Years of Thrill Power event in Hammersmith on Saturday. We're sold out of tickets. They're packed to the rafters. We've got over 100 guests. Give people an idea of either what they're going to be witnessing or what they're going to be missing.
It's a tricky one to sum up. You're going to be missing a great deal, as far as I'm concerned. I think we've jam-packed the program, so we got tons of signings, a whole raft of signing schedule throughout the day. We got massive panels full of top A-list creator is the cream of the crop. We have a whole creator mega way full of writers, artists, letterers, editors, the pretty much everyone we could grab together that could make it into one room. So they'll be signing and sketching all day, available to meet the fans. We have a dedicated bespoke Slane bar with some horns of ale available.
Those horns may look suspiciously like pint glasses.
Some decapitated heads, perhaps. Things of that nature. We also have some extra surprises, as well as exhibitors who are close to us in 2000 AD, and we'll be doing exclusive toys, prints.
Well, we've seen some of the prints. I mean, the ones that Vice are putting out alone are, as far as I'm concerned, worth the price of entry. I mean, that Sean Phillips Church and State with Devlin Waugh and Anderson, that's going on my wall.
Yeah. I mean, across the board, all of the exclusives we've got for the show are genuinely staggering.
Yeah.
I'm just going to walk around and put them in all in my pockets until I get stopped by the judges. So there's all that kind of stuff. We've got a little surprises along the way. We've got a huge live draw area that's going to feature a rotating roster of art droids throughout the day.
I mean, that the lineup for that is incredible. You've got Simon Bisley and Jock.
Yeah,
live drawing and talking to who's hosting the live draw?
It's Adam Sharif, who is a stable mate of mine from when we used to do the Orbiting Pod together. Works at Orbital Comics, a comics historian as well. So he really knows his stuff, and he's really excited, and it's thrilling to have him involved all day. He's kind of the host of that.
And aside from the creator tables, we've also got a big signing area we've had to pack them in. So it's five at a time, 45 minutes each. And the lineup there is incredible. It's basically we wanted two exceptions to who's who.
Oh, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we wanted to program it as such that if you couldn't maybe make it onto one element because it was so popular, there was something just as good around the corner that you could kind of get into. So that was really the plan, was to cater and have as much stuff going on and create a kind of carnival of future all the way through the day. That was the idea, really.
It was nice of them to really reinforce the kind of mega cityness of the venue by demolishing the building next door at the same time. Yeah,
that should add to everyone's experience the immersive, almost secret cinema-esque layer of, you know, falling debris.
That was a hell of a day in the Nerve Centre when we found that out. Several diodes exploding, shall we say. For those who can't make it, I know a lot of people are disappointed that we can't fit more people into the venue, which unfortunately we can't because of the health and safety, fire capacity, et cetera, et cetera. But people should subscribe to the 2000 AD YouTube channel. Keep an eye on our Facebook and our Twitter, because we're recording as much of the day, aren't we?
Yes. We have a whole team dedicated to kind of capturing as much of the flavour to share with other people as possible. So just watch this space and stay involved with us online, and we'll try and give you as much of the day as we can if you couldn't be there. Because obviously, it's impossible to have everybody all in one go, and we're doing our very best to make sure that those who weren't there are kind of catered to as well.
Absolutely. Are you looking forward to getting some sleep on Sunday?
Yes, actually, yeah. I'm absolutely. It's been great, you know. I only see centipedes when I close my eyes at this point.
Well, to be
it's
quite
been
frank,
a blast. It really has.
Yeah, sitting next to you, I can see how much work has gone into it, and we've worked together on it. I know the rest of the team are going to be there on the day, working hard, volunteering. So, well done so far.
Thank you. And everyone's done an incredible job in the planning. Absolutely everybody.
Absolutely. So if you've not seen the details, then do go on to 2000adonline.com/news, where information about the day and a full floor plan is available. Like I said, make sure you are fully signed up to our social media on YouTube, Twitter and Facebook, so that you can join in the celebrations for 40 years of thrill power. Owen, Thanks so much for joining us. Now get back to work. Well, we've sent Owen back off to his desk pod to plug back into the mainframe so that he can continue sorting everything out for this weekend. Kudos to him and to everyone involved with the 40th anniversary event this Saturday. It promises to be an absolute corker. Now, as we were talking about earlier in the show, Thrill Power Overload. Updated, revised, expanded. Another 10 years, 30,000 extra words added, over 100 pages. This is the definitive history of 2000 AD, originally written by David Bishop, who's a former editor, but now updated by journalist Carl Stock. And it's great to welcome him to chat about this new edition, which is out this week.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for coming on, guys. David, I'm aware that you've done you had a long chat with Eamon Clark, who does the Megacity Book Club podcast about your time as 2000 AD editor and putting Thrill Power Overload together. So I'll try not to go too much over the same ground. But do you want to explain a little bit about the genesis of Thrill Power Overload?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so. It essentially started, I was, obviously I was an editor of 2000 AD, second half of the 90s, and then I quit to go freelance, but I was freelance editing the Judge Dredd magazine for about 18 months or so after I left 2000. And then the Rebellion bought the title back in-house and hired a wonderful editor called Alan Barnes to run the Judge Dredd magazine. Oh, I think towards the end of 2001, Alan took over at the magazine. And one of the first things he did is he phoned me up and said, 25th anniversary of 2000 AD is rapidly upon us. And nobody's really written the definitive history of the galaxy's greatest comic. Would I like to have a crack at it? And I was like, gosh, it's a bit daunting. There's a lot of material to cover. And he said, well, you know, 6 to 8 articles, up to 5,000 words per article, that ought to get the job done. And in my foolishness, I said, yes, of course, that sounds very straightforward. And the reality proved considerably more complex than that. It ended up running to, oh, I lose track, at least 13 articles in the end, if not longer, I think. It was a very long job. It was a real labor of love. I think I did over 100 different interviews. I don't know how many hundreds of hours of interviews I did in the end, but 100 different interviews took place, and then rereading as many progs as I could get my hands on. So it was a monumental task, and it ran in the magazine for over a year. And it was Alan who christened the articles, the series of articles, Thrill Power Overload. And readers seem to really appreciate them. And it sort of illuminated a lot of things many people didn't know about the history of 2000 AD, including me. I mean, my time in the House of Tharg was, July 1993 to June 2000. So the first 13 years history of the comic and the run-up to its creation was all new to me. So I discovered a lot of things I had no awareness of whatsoever as I was researching and writing the articles. So that's how the original articles came about. And as I was working on it, I thought, Mike, there's a book in this. There's definitely a book in this. But at the time, Rebellion didn't have a book publishing line. Now Rebellion has this massive behemoth of graphic novels, and in Solaris and Abaddon, and two different multiple imprints for prose novels and all sorts. But way back in the year 2002, it was sort of still getting to grips with actually how you publish 2000 AD in the magazine and keeping the show on the road. So at that point, Rebellion weren't best placed to do the book version. So I did try and shop it around a little, but Titan Books turned it down. Fools, plan old fools. And I was like, fine, okay. So I just thought, I'll just sit on it. This project will find its day and its time. And then as the 30th anniversary was approaching, I can't remember if I approached Rebellion or Rebellion approached me about maybe it's time to do the book edition. So the book edition came out 2007 as a hardcover, and then the soft cover came out 2009. The paperback came out in 2009, if memory serves. But basically, for the first book edition, it was a case of going back to first principles, go through all the interviews again. I did dozens of new interviews because there were a lot of people I missed the first time around, and because it was sort of it was being published on a month by month basis, issue by issue basis, you know, there were some people I only managed to catch up to after I passed a lot of their early work in the comic. So I was able to go back, correct a few mistakes that had crept into the original articles, and then add a lot of new material and new people whose voices weren't heard in the original run. And that's how the original book of Thrill Power Overload came about.
Hmm. As a former editor of 2000 AD, do you think that gave you any extra insight, or was it as much as, you know, as you've kind of mentioned already, a journey of discovery for yourself as well as for readers?
Well, certainly, I mean, having worked in the editorial office, both in the magazine for 5 years and then on 2000 for 4.5 years, it does give you a unique insight into the pressures involved for the editorial team. So I think that certainly helped. It makes you slightly more forgiving of some of the decisions that have been made over the years by editorial teams at 2000 AD, because having been there myself and having made plenty of my own mistakes as editor, then you do have a different appreciation of quite what it's like at the other end of the telescope. I mean, readers of the comic are not short of a strong opinion, and they're entitled to that. They're the ones paying to buy it. But certainly having been there, you get a sense of some of the challenges that are in play, which may not necessarily be quite so visible from the outside looking in. But yeah, I mean, certainly covering the first sort of the creation of the comic, its early years, the two or three times when it was nearly cancelled or cast aside for various reasons. Yeah, for that, to me, it was just a fascinating period of discovery to find out what had happened and the many, many different opinions as to what happened and why it happened and who did what to whom and when and why.
Hmm. We'll come on to that because I've got some questions about that in a second. Carl, when you've got a book that as David has detailed, is as big and as wide-ranging as Thrill Power Overload, mm-hmm. how did you come to be doing the update?
Tharg asked me to, basically. Mm-hmm. I've been writing articles for him for a couple of years, I think, and he just asked me to do it. He explained that David had decided not to do the updates. It's quite interesting that I actually David was my tutor once upon a time in the creative writing course that he teaches in Edinburgh now, and people might hear that and think that he somehow set me up with the job, but I contacted Matt Smith independently and started writing for him, and one day out of the blue I said to David, by the way, I believe you're not doing Thrill Power Overload. So I am. he seemed pleased with that news. I went in to meet him, and he gave me some tips, he gave me some pointers. One of the first things he said was, I got all the good stuff. Basically, he got all the drama, and I had 10 years of things kind of going along nicely, and everyone seeming to get along with each other and enjoy what they were doing, whereas he had the near cancellations every other year and the big kind of dramatic personality clashes and all that. So
I guess from your point of view, as you say, you know, things have been ticking along nicely over sort of the last 10 years, but also, I guess so many people who've been at 2000 AD over the last 10 years are still working for it. So, yeah, you know, how do you kind of find if there is dirt there? How do you actually bring that to the surface, if you will?
Well, I found very little dirt. And I mean, it was kind of, it was the plan for how it was going to be laid out in terms of the chapters came from Matt originally, and he had a list of all the kind of series that he wanted covered in it to discuss the new series, the big events, things like Day of Chaos and whatnot, and the Dread film. And I just kind of went through that and just spoke to everybody. I encouraged everybody I spoke to, whether it was by email or by phone or in person, to be as open as possible and to try to to critique what they'd done in the process as much as possible. But people very rarely did. They just, some people said, I really wasn't happy with that story. Other people, you know, there was a look back on the work that they'd done, and people were open about that. But in terms of their relationships with one another, everyone seems to be, you may know better than I do, but everyone seems to be quite a happy family of very nice, interesting people who love what they do on 2000 AD. There was a little, there were one or two little bits in there, like, you know, apparently when Samantha Slade came to an end, there was the Ian Gibson's departure from 2000 AD quite publicly, and apparently he and Alan Grant had beef going back some years, but I tried to get that out of them. But you know, things like that, I think personal details, they're not inclined to go into them, and you don't want to push it if it's not relevant to the story itself. There's enough there that you kind of get an idea of why the story itself and why the partnership broke down and so on.
Coming back to you, David, I mean, that's an interesting point. How do you sift it? Because after 40 years, the amount of kind of hearsay, gossip, you know, people's memories changing, being affected by what happened subsequently, how do you sift through that and actually try and get to the truth?
It's tricky. It isn't easy because a lot of people remember things in different ways, and the further you get away from events, the truth or capital T or small T becomes sort of blurrier with memory, because I'm whenever I run into people at comics events, they'll busy tell me, oh, you wrote this scathing rejection of me, and I'm always sorry, because I had a slight tendency to go scathing when it came to rejections, although most of the people who say that to me also are now perfectly successful creators, and they will put their hand up to, yeah, I wasn't ready, it's fine. It was just a bit harsh going at the time, but then that's kind of my editorial style, alas, as I can see from distance now. But there were times when I was writing the original articles and then doing the revised Thrill Power Overload, the book, and I just, there was simply no way of knowing what the truth, capital T, small t, the reality of a situation was, and the best I could do was sort of present contrasting versions of what had happened and go for some sort of Rashomon effect where you just see what everybody's version of events were, and you leave it to the reader to try and draw their own conclusions. So that's always the challenge. I mean, it always cracks me up. There's one particular creator who will perpetually bang on about the history of 2000 AD being subject to blatant revisionism, and then produces their own version of events, which some people might consider to be slightly revisionist, but without naming any names in particular. But the best you can do as a journalist, and my approach to the book, although, you know, I was a character in the book effectively, in events, in some of the events depicted, was to try and be as objective a journalist as a writer as I could, because I mean, it's not easy when you get to your own period in the comic. You are blinded by what happened at the time, but you have to be willing to try and, you know, allow other people to completely have their say and voice their opinion, and then present that to the reader and let, you know, history make its judgment.
Is there anything that that you wish you had included but didn't?
The things that I left out were either potentially actionable in a court of law. Alan, I mean, I spent 5 years as a daily newspaper journalist in New Zealand. So I have an awareness of what the limits of are in terms of defamation and libel, at least under the British judicial system, because the New Zealand judicial system is essentially based on the same thing. So the challenge there was, when it comes to libel, it's is it true is the first defense. Can you prove that it's true is the second defense, because when it comes to defaming somebody, the onus of proof is on the person who published or said the statement, not on the person accusing you of defamation. And then finally, even if it is true and you can prove that it's true, has it been published in a way to bring the subject of that statement into ridicule in the eyes of their peers, i.e. is there some sort of malice involved? And you have to prove that there was no malice involved. So as a consequence, there were some things that people said which I simply could not in good faith put into the articles or the book, because they could be actionable in the court of law. There was a few other things which I was witness to, which I could have put into the book because I was there, I saw it done, I heard the conversations. But either I didn't feel it was relevant to the story that was being told, or it could get people into legal trouble, neither of which I wanted to do. So
I guess that's the great difficulty of doing any kind of history, particularly if you're hoping to do a kind of warts and all history of something, is that, as you say, there are limits, but that doesn't stop something being, say, definitive or you know, the kind of best way of explaining what quite often has been lost to provable memory, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was like the occasion I remember walking into when I was working on the magazine. I walked into the 2000 AD office, had its own separate office at that point. And the editorial team weren't in the room, but there were two creators doing a drug deal over Tharg's desk. But, you know, I'm not in a position to judge that, and I certainly wasn't going to put it into the book because it wasn't relevant to the work that they were doing. It was just something I happened to be witness to. So you go, well, let's not go there. And I was the only witness to the occasion, so it wasn't worth it. Or another occasion involving, you know, a particular individual and things that were said and things that were done, and I won't get into the details, but, you know, so actually, is that part of the history of the comic, or is that just a lapse in judgment that doesn't necessarily colour who they are or what they did? So I tried to, it's one of those use your best skill in judgment and try and decide what is the book actually about. Is it about the comic and its creation and what went into that? Or is it about personal choices of the individuals involved? Where do you separate the art from the artist? All these sorts of questions arise.
Carl, how did you find it? Because obviously you're building on top of the foundation that David has laid. Did you consciously ape David's way of writing, or was it much more, you know, I've got so much information to fit into here, it kind of all just slots into place?
Yeah, it was more of the latter, I think. I mean, I'm a journalist myself as well, so I kind of went for that approach. Once you detail everything that's happened, to get the kind of in the horse from the horse's mouth quotes from all concerned, and pretty much everybody involved, every artist, every writer I contacted, was more than helpful to send me back questions to give me the story in there from their first person perspective. Once you've got all that laid out in front of you, and there's loads of background detail and things like this, and you have to hack away so much of it just to fit. I mean, there are 30,000 extra words, more than that, in the new book. But to cover everything that's happened in that time, if you want to give every new series its due, give some of the background stuff as well, some of the stuff that goes on in terms of how the business, for want of a better word, has grown. Once you've covered all of that, then you're doing a purely journalistic job. You know, you don't really want to kind of, you want to stay away from it yourself. You don't have to dress it up. You don't have to elaborate it in any way. The writers and artists are more than eloquent, and the editors are more than eloquent enough to speak for themselves, really. And I think they do. I hope they do anyway.
And Carl, what does 2008 mean to you? I mean, obviously you've got you've got work out of it as a journalist, but what was it like? You know, contributing to the official definitive history of 2000 AD and your personal experience of the comic?
It was an honour, to be honest. I mean, I remember I was discussing this with someone the other day, actually, the kind of the memory of your first 2000 AD never really goes away. And I remember getting, I was about 8 years old, and a hairdresser in my local hairdresser, and they had a bunch of comics to give away. And I still remember the point, I can pick out each individual prog. There were lots of gaps in it as well, so it was great to go back and go around all the charity shops and the car boot sales and film in. But it was round about the time of the Moses incident and the killing and the first few episodes of Outlaw, just a real kind of golden period for Strontium Dog. A lot of Great Dread as well, the Graveyard Shift and stuff like that. So ever since then, I've read it every week. I've read the magazine. I filled in pretty much all the gaps before that. You know, for 30 years, I've been a 2000 AD reader. And I still read it now, but it was great to go back and kind of read over things in bulk again. I think it's a kind of, it's an experience that maybe not a lot of readers had back in the day necessarily. They would throw out their old copies, whereas now you have the trades, you can go back and read the entire story, you can get a different perspective on it. And it was good to be able to put some time aside and just read stories in their entirety, rather than just, you know, with the kind of staccato kind of cliffhanger breaks week to week and picking it up the week after. It was great fun, to be honest.
David, obviously, as we've mentioned, you know, you have a relationship with 2000 AD because you're the former editor. But what did doing Thrill Power Overload do to your appreciation of the comic? Did it bring it to life? Did it help it? Did it encourage it? Or has it given you a darker perspective or anything like that?
Interesting question. I think it certainly gave me an appreciation for what previous editorial teams had gone through. It was the sort of the discovery, the number of bullets that it dodged over the years when it could easily have ceased to exist. And when you think about the dozens and dozens of writers and artists and colorers and colorists and letterers who have worked on the title, who've gone on and worked in other fields, both in comics but also film and TV and computer games. And it's when you step back and you sort of see the entirety of the journey that you appreciate just how big a presence 2000 AD has been in the creative industries. The impact it has had for people who has worked on it, the importance of it for a lot of people as a stepping stone to other areas. I think it gave me a much bigger appreciation of the importance of 2000 AD. It's sort of when it's the thing that Carl was talking about, the idea that when you read it week to week, you don't sort of appreciate the magnitude of the achievement or the hundreds and thousands of achievements that have emerged from it as a title, the things that it's managed to pull off on a limited budget, often, and with, you know, limited resources, and yet it's able to achieve some wondrous things. It certainly didn't darken my perspective of 2000 AD. I will admit that after I finished the book, I did flog my collect back copies of 2000 AD, but I suddenly discovered that the office I work in became a lot colder when I didn't have my walls insulated by all that Thrill Power.
And one thing I wanted to ask about, there's some notable exceptions from Thrill Power Overload, people who aren't interviewed, that you weren't able to interview. I'm thinking Alan Moore, Richard Burton, Alan McKenzie, a couple of other people. Do you want to explain a bit about why people that readers might expect to see in there aren't?
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, Alan Moore, I approached and asked him if he would be willing to be interviewed for the original articles. And it was 15 years since he had worked for the title. And he made his position very clear about how he felt how the rights to all creations for 2008 should be returned to their original creators. And until that happened, he wouldn't be working for the title again. So on and so forth. But, you know, I figured you have to ask. It's Alan Moore, you have to ask. So I got in contact with him. I talked to him on the phone. And he very, very politely turned me down, wished me best of luck with the project. And that was the end of the conversation, really. And the reality with Alan, of course, is that he's given many, many interviews over the years. Mm-hmm. So I did say, you know, well, I'll be using past interviews, and he seemed to sort of give that the nod. So the easiest thing was simply to go back, and then it was a case of trying to source old fanzines from the 80s where he'd talked a lot about his process and the work that he had done and the origins of it and his feelings about it. So there was interview material available that was contemporaneous, if you will. So it sort of captured his feelings at the time he was creating the material and immediately after he had stopped working for 2008. So it sort of captured the essence of his 2008 journey pretty effectively, I thought. So although he politely turned me down, it wasn't apocalyptic. I'm trying to remember. I think I asked Richard and he also declined. He talked about he was going to write his own history of 2008. Although I haven't seen anything yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing it when it's published. And again, he had done interviews and talked about the comic when he was on the editorial team. Alan McKenzie, I don't think I did ask. I think I kind of knew what Alan's reply would have been. But again, he had talked quite a bit to readers and fans on various online forums at the end of the 90s and then into the early 2000s. So there was plenty of Alan McKenzie quotes that were available and in the public domain. So I utilized some of those. So yeah, I mean, that's it. I think the other notable exception was Mark Miller, actually. He wasn't really in a talking about 2008 mood in the early 2000s. He was sort of on the rise in America, or unless he was on one of his dips in America at the time, I can't recall. He had a sort of roller coaster journey to the superstardom he now enjoys. So he wasn't really talking about 2008 at that point. He has given interviews since then and talked to sort of, you know, being quite dismissive of his early work for 2000, which may or may not match up to the opinions of some readers. I leave that to their best skill and judgment. But otherwise, no, I was pretty happy. The one person who was hugely cooperative at the start of the TPO journey was Pat Mills, who we had a very long correspondence via email, where he sort of gave me chapter and verse of his version of events and how they had occurred and how they come about. But as we approached the era when I became editor of 2008, he felt I could no longer be objective enough to tell the story. So he chose not to continue giving me information towards the articles, which I felt was a shame, but his prerogative.
And looking back, I mean, the Thrill Power Overload, the updated edition is, I mean, the original was a chunky enough hardcover. I mean, this is an absolute, well, it's a dangerous weapon in the right hands. As Carlos said, you know, we're talking like 30,000 extra words. David, looking back on this and thinking about your journey with TPO and also with 2008, what's the thing that really stands out for you? Why has this comic survived for 40 years when so many have fallen by the wayside?
Golly. There are many reasons. It grew up with its readers, I think, is one of the main ones. It evolved with its readers, where other titles stayed doing what they were always doing. The creators of 2000 AD and its editorial teams over the years were more ambitious than just doing the same old, same old. I think it coincided with, but actually also helped to unearth a generation of incredible comics talents at the end of the 70s, the early 80s. And then when those people sort of moved on, mostly to American comics by the mid 80s, it became a stepping stone into the American marketplace. So it became a place for people who wanted to tell particular kinds of stories or comic stories in a particular genre. So it became a conduit for talent. It became a magnet for talent. So there was always the next generation of new writers and the next generation of new artists who would step in to fill the gap. So there's been this glorious, gifted conveyor belt of creators who have worked for the title, who refreshed the title. So it never becomes truly stale. There are moments of dips in quality, but long-term readers will forgive those on the basis that they've seen enough of the journey to know that you may have the odd bad issue or even a bad run of a few stories, but there's always something great in the pipeline. So I think that's been a big factor. I think just the sheer creative talent that's gone through it. I think it's an incredibly mutable format. The anthology comic is a very mutable format. It means you can make it what you want it to be. It's been lucky. It's had one or two brilliant creations over the years that have helped keep it going. Dread being the obvious standout. And the fact that it's set predominantly in the future, it's a comic of tomorrow, which enables it to comment upon today through that sort of satirical prism, which enables it to operate, stories operate on more than one level. It's not just things blowing up. It's not just thrills or daring do. It's not just adventures or violence. It has an extra edge to it, which elevates the material, which means there's something for younger readers can appreciate the action adventure and the older readers can see the metaphorical underpinnings of what's going on beneath the surface. So it's a lot of things, really. And fortunately, I think it was acquired by Rebellion at probably just the right moment. And Rebellion has done what pretty much nobody else had managed to do previously, which is to start to exploit this 40-year history of brilliant creativity and make that available again to readers. And I think that made a big difference. I shudder to think what would have happened to 2008 if it had remained at its previous ownership. I think it just would have been run into the ground and then turned off the lights.
Carl, as the person who's updated Thrill Power Overload, you've got the perspective on the modern age, the kind of the main run of Matt Smith's era as editor and the Rebellion era at 2008. What's your takeaway about the creative health of the comic?
Well, I think as David said, when he was coming to the end of his section of the book, the first three quarters of it, there is that kind of that kind of finale where it looks like the title is about to die as you come up to the year 2000, and then somehow survives beyond that and is given new life by Rebellion. But in those early days of Rebellion's ownership, there's the feeling that they were very much still finding their feet and figuring out how to run a comic, as you say. But in the last 10 years, it's not a question of continuing survival of more of the same. But I think because 2000 AD retains such a loyal readership going way back, there has to be an element of more of the same. You know, people still expect to read a Wagner and a Esquire, a Judge Dredd every so often, and be blown away by how in touch with that character they still are. But there's a lot of new stuff coming out, a lot of new material, and a lot of creators who are really new and interesting voices. People like Rob Williams, Al Ewing, are big names in America now. You know, people, when 2000 AD is discussed a lot of the time in the mainstream press, it's in terms of Alan Moore, Mark Miller, Grant Morrison, you know, Judge Dredd, Halo Jones, Nemesis the Warlock. It's characters who are 20 or 30 years older. But there's such a wealth of talent now that I think really needs to be celebrated. And the Rebellion, you get the feeling they've really found their foot and found their footing in terms of doing that, in terms of how to present the material beyond the weekly reader, how to get everything into easily readable book format, make it available online, make it available in transatlantic editions, in American-sized, US-sized comics. I know Brass Sun was a reasonably big success for the standards of an independent comic. They've got the team up with IDW as well. There are all these things happening in the last decade which are really taking, they're really in touch with what is happening in comics at the moment. And there's a real sense at the end of it that the future is, there's a wide open future for all of these characters, new and old, and still to come.
Well, many thanks to David and to Carl for chatting there. If you would like to meet the gents in person and even get a signed copy of Thrill Power Overload, then make sure you get along to the Waterstones West End store in Edinburgh on the 24th of February at 12:30. That's Friday, 24th of February at 12:30, where they're going to be doing a little book launch of the revised and updated edition. Well, that's all we've got time for, I'm afraid, Earthlitz. I need to get back out there and carry on with the prep for this weekend. Those of you who are coming, see you there. Looking forward to it. Those who can't, like I said, do make sure you follow us on YouTube, Twitter and Facebook for all the latest updates, not just about the 40th anniversary, but also the galaxy's greatest comic, Splundig Verthrig, Squawk's Deck Thaga.
Thrill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000 AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down!